B. As man looks about him and sees all the beauty he is surrounded with, a voice seems to whisper to him that Earth would be a heaven if he could, somewhere in its summer sheen or autumn shadows, discovered the secret of his being, he would have the magic key to all desire. The spirit of vanishing days seems warning him that the fragrant flower of life blooms once in creation's garden. C. If he could interpret the message of nature, he would know that the death he sees daily is only a change, and would look upon the close of his life with the same feeling of trust that a tired child feels when it sinks into sweet slumber in its mother's arms. D. Man is so intent upon drinking to the dregs the cup of his earth life that he does not raise his eyes to view the beautiful scenes before him. 716. Man must do something to qualify himself for the life that is his after he leaves the earth plane, and he will find that it is the path of right striving and doing that will lead him to eternal joy. Purity, love and harmony all point to the gateway of eternal life. That the changes of nature mean something more to man than he has ever got out of them, is the inevitable conclusion of a thinking mind. They speak to him in no uncertain tones of a fuller, happier life. 717. The dread of death is not only the inheritance of man, but to him, of all living things, it should be an assurance that nature is not a party to it. The broad fellowship of outdoor life should prove to all who are interested in a future life, and who is not, that the change from earth to spirit life is only a slight one, and if he only understood the secret of life, it would come to man as to the trees and flowers. 718. How often we see poor, tired men, looking with longing eyes toward the shores of eternity. They should not grow tired of their earth sojourn, and neither would they, if they had spent their lives as nature intended they should, in peaceful, happy surroundings. 719. The fact of continued progress is everywhere apparent. It is continued evolution more than the result of mere intellectual development. He who does the things he should do, is great. Make for nobler life, pitch the music of the coming years in sweeter tones. It is of high importance to find the things to do and leave all else, however attractive it may be, undone. It is of supreme consequence to every man to discover his mission in the world and seek to fill his niche and to remain the content. 720. The first thing is to make resolute search within your heart and make the great discovery of the aim and usefulness of your individual life. He who succeeds in this discovery, and holds firmly to it all his earth life, has made a success, whether he wears purple and fine linen, or homespun. 721. You scan the heavens with telescopes, but far wiser is the man who becomes the astronomer of his own soul. A. You make analysis of the soil of the field, but more difficult, more desirable it is to make analysis of the soil of your own heart, and find what flowers may grow the best, and what noxious weeds must be guarded against. 722. It is not what a man does that makes him great, but what he is. Action is merely thought dressed in visible garb. Being must ever precede doing. A. Below the surface which the world sees, are springs which feed the life. To keep these springs fresh and sweet, is the best object of endeavor. B. Study yourself carefully, and also study the seeming simple things of nature, and you will learn that the secret of life is eternal progress, and that the earth life, which is of the utmost importance, is only the primary grade of life. C. Learn your first lessons well, that you may have a solid basis for your future unfoldment. D. Learn these things, and you will not be ready at the great banquet table of life to turn down an empty glass. 723. Immortality is the first promise that man is conscious of, but as he acquires that which he considers worldly knowledge, he tries to rid himself of this promise, and at the same time he tries to hold it tighter. It stays with him, and no matter how often he may deny the fact, his everyday life keeps before him the claims of immortality, the fields, the fireside, the love and companionship of his fellow beings all suggest immortality. The very thought that death ends all, causes him to shudder. Life would indeed be a hollow mockery if the earth life, with its joys and sorrows, its lights and shadows, were the end. Every heart throb is a protest to such thoughts. Nature not only promises you eternal life, but fulfills that promise, else we would not be here tonight encouraging you to better efforts. Signed, Ada 724. When this celestial messenger had finished her writing and was returning into the cabinet, Redfeather said to her, "Please, lady, will you come round in front, so that all the circle may see you plainly?" The spirit, however, kept right on into the cabinet, from Arena. But a moment later she came out of the cabinet, at the center, attired in exceedingly brilliant costume. 725. Then Thomas Paine, in his ordinarily splendid makeup, clad in the style of American colonial days, emerged from the cabinet at the southeast corner and walked out to near the center of the room, an admirable specimen of physical manhood, but spake not a word, and slowly backed into the cabinet at S.E. corner, and instantly came out at central parting of the curtains, carefully stepped about, in front of the cabinet, but with sealed lips. Although the whole circle were begging him to speak, yet his tongue was silent and his whole demeanor indicated that he realized that the inexpressibly deep significance of the occasion required that people of earth and men spirits of the upper deep should keep silent in presence of women messengers as they undertake to reveal to children of earth the great secret of life. 726. And following pain, Mrs. Levy came out of the cabinet, clad in robes of simple pattern but of very brilliant, even shining white, so illuminating, indeed, above the light of the room as to shine on the secretary's clothing and notepaper as she passed him by to reach her old friend Van Horn, who was in the circle, and she standing at the feet of this one, reaching towards him, and at times entirely touching him. Though this glorified once said but little, yet her pantomiming could be readily interpreted to signify, "My dear friend, your sands of life are nearly run their last round. You have many well-meant trials of earth laid away as treasures for you on the spirit side of life. Soon your work, so faithfully done on earth, will close, and for your coming, your friends in spirit are preparing a banquet that shall be in compensation for your disappointments while on earth. Be of good cheer, resting assured of a triumphant transition to your glorious spirit home." 727. Then the spirit Denton stood forth in his usual personnel and the circle expected that he would give a sample of his vocalization and urge that he speak and that he insist that Paine also speak, if but a few words, but Denton answered, "We step aside and give this evening to the ladies and cannot trespass upon their time," and the spirit stepped back into the cabinet. 728. Then a spirit came forth, rushing right up near to friend Van Horn, who recognizing the spirit as his son Robert, said, "Why, Bob, how are you?" And after some exchange of familiar pleasantries and recollections between the two, the spirit gave the wonderful test of dematerializing downwardly as before described. 729. One spirit stepped out of the cabinet who seemed an entire stranger to spirit return, and at this time made his first experience. Looking all about the room he said, "Where am I at? What is this? What are all these things about here?" And being answered by the circle, he seemed satisfied, and went away into the cabinet. 730. Judge W. D. Smith, of Sparta, Tennessee, having heard of the psychic phenomena occurring at this little village of Spring Hill, Kansas, and being desirous to know for himself whether, after all, future life in conscious entity and spirit return are demonstrable realities, as claimed in Rending the Veil, and as averred by some of his intimate friends who had been, and seen, and been shown, resolved that if such things be so, he would know of the matter for himself, whether it is eternal truth or a huge delusion. Therefore, at his earliest convenience he went in search of this insignificant Nazareth, requiring the long journey of near 1,000 miles. And at last, on November 20, 1902, arrived at the little Mecca, but seeing no excited multitudes and hearing no loud de-doy-ums, he wondered whether to hunt for the borning of this great truth in a palace or manger. Upon inquiry was directed to the little cottage on the hill by the great gas well. By the great gas well. Aha! Sold again. Neither fact, delusion, nor collusion, but simply gas. Well, continuing the soliloquy, I am here and shall make the most of it. If they put up the faces of any of my dead friends, they will do so without any revelation from me. And thus the 3/4 mile from railroad station to Medium's home was soliloquized away, and the cottage door opened, and the judge found himself comfortably situated in the small home of the medium and his wife, everything about, having the appearance of an humble cottage home of just common white people. And here the judge makes his home with perfect freedom to the whole premises in and about the house, the séance room, paraphernalia of the séance, and everything connected or pertaining thereto, the same as he would have had at his own home. And now comes the séance hour. Members of the circle begin to come, and others from a distance, as himself, and as the judge is introduced, he detects no fumes of sulphur, nor horns, nor cloven hoofs, nor sable garments, nor any dark-visaged monster, nor even rattling of chains in the cabinet, but all much as a social gathering of plebeians about his own home. And the half-hour discussion of various topics by the circle, and the reading and passing upon the secretary's record of occurrences of previous séance and retiring into séance room and seating of circle, and lowering of lights down to a twilight shade with medium in cabinet, no white clothing upon the medium and no white garments or white articles of cloth in the cabinet. But first form to appear is Dr. Reed, having white shirt bosom, then others in quick succession, even ladies entirely dressed in white garments. 40 or 50 forms appear, among them some that the judge recognizes, others for him whom he does not recognize, but enough occurred to satisfy the judge's analytical mind that there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamed of by the common dreamer, and he continues with the séances to Sunday and Tuesday evenings following, and relates his principal experiences of the 3 séances in the third person as follows, to wit, 731. There appeared, just in front of the cabinet, a beautiful form of a little boy, apparently 5 or 6 years of age, and addressing Judge Smith, said, in clear, distinct and audible voice, "Good evening, Uncle Billy." To which the judge replied, "How do you do, my little boy?" And the judge recognized the form as that of the child of his brother, whose little boy passed out 5 or 6 years ago. The judge asked, "Who is this?" To which the little fellow, in a sweet voice, replied, "Eugale." The judge asked, "What must I tell your papa?" He replied, "Tell him you saw me. I am mighty glad to see you." And the little form vanished. This was so realistic to the judge that he could not refrain from shedding tears. 732. A peculiar coincidence, the judge says, is that, when this child passed out, his father and mother were hovering over the child, anxious to know whether the child was conscious or not, and in a weak voice the child spelled his name, Ucal, and soon passed out. As the judge was there and obtained these particulars soon after the transition and supposed that sweet voice to be silenced for this world if not forever, and now, 6 years after that innocent tongue was silent in the tomb, to be confronted with the presence of that child from beyond the grave, in his resurrection garments, and again pronouncing his own name and uttering the salutation, "Good evening, Uncle Billy," would surely soften the heart of him who had brains enough to think and consider. 733. Then appeared a form which the judge recognized as that of his uncle, Dr. H. P. Smith, of White County, a physician of some note in that community, and this form said to the judge, "This is your Uncle Henry." 734. Then a form which the judge did not recognize. This was a large form, with long, black, heavy beard. He attempted to give his name, which the judge and others understood to be Southard. The judge, remembering no person of that name, made the appearance unsatisfactory, but the apparition gave his long whiskers several strokes, apparently trying hard to be recognized but without success at this time. 735. At the next séance, however, the same form appeared in better makeup, and then the judge recognized the form as that of a prominent lawyer of his town who was killed some years ago. The form gave his name as Swafford, and Smith says that, in a low tone, the form gave his initials as T.J.R. He also showed Smith the wound in his side from which he died. Smith was the second man to him after he was shot. The judge said to him, "Are you hurt much?" And he said, "My dear friend, I am killed," and showed to the judge the fatal wound, and the judge administered to the dying man, and in compensation for the kindness and friendship towards him. The spirit is demonstrating to Smith the fact of life beyond the grave. And the judge says that he can now appreciate the experience of doubting Thomas. John 20, 24, 28, 736. Judge Smith says that at each of the three seances, November 20th, 23rd, and 25 respectively, a lady, beautifully robed in white, tried hard to be recognized by him and once tried to give her name, but could not do so, apparently very much to her discomfiture. But on Tuesday evening, she was the first form to appear to him, and asked him, "Billy, do you know me?" The judge replied, "Yes," and asked for her name, which she gave as Jane, and said, "God bless you, Billy," and vanished. 737. This form the judge recognized as Jane Boyd, a lady whom his father had raised from the age of about 12 years. The form turned the front and side of her face two or three times to the judge to give him an opportunity to scrutinize, and exhibited signs of emotions of delight at being so recognized. 738. And when the lady had gone away, the form of an old man appeared, which to Judge Smith was so realistic that he addressed it as grandfather, and the form said, "How do you do, William?" and instantly dematerialized downwardly, at the judge's left side. The words and intonations, the judge says, were those of his grandfather. In life, he always called his grandson William. The grandfather's name was William Templeton, after whom the judge was named. The grandfather was 96 years old at his decease. 739. The judge says that he gave no information to any person in connection with these seances from which the identifying facts of these aforesaid statements of his could possibly have been known before these things are brought out at these seances as afore herein stated. 740. And the judge seems to think that if these experiences, such as he has had at these seances, will not sufficiently answer the question of Job in the affirmative, there is little use to depend on testimony of any kind whatever to settle any question. Seance number 45, November 27, 1902, 741. There were present, as the persons forming the circle on this occasion, C. V. N. House and his wife, Mrs. B. House, Dr. E. J. Circus, Joseph Simpson, Charles Roda, Mrs. Maggie Newman, Mrs. Mary I. Dye, Ms. May Cook, Judge W. I. Smith, G. W. Spirit, of Derby, Iowa, and George Hosfelt, of Topeka, Kansas. A. After reading and approving of the secretary's record of seance 44, the circle repaired to the seance room, and when all were properly seated and medium in the cabinet, and the usual salutations of dry reed were concluded, Professor Denton stepped out of the cabinet, making his usual verbal greeting to the circle and especially to Judge Smith, as the judge was to leave for his home on the morrow. The spirit said, 742. I hope our good friend, the judge, will consider that he is well paid for his time and expense of making this visit, in that he has here learned more of the purposes of life, from which he can more fully realize than ever before, that life is worth living, that death does not end all, but that one's life goes on and on and on, to infinity, that each one is guided by the protecting care and presence of some friend, or friends, who have gone on before to spirit life, and that many of such friends wait and watch for the coming after, of those struggling through the earth conditions. 743. And as Denton went into the cabinet at S. E. Corner, the artist came jabbering from the cabinet at 10. W. Corner, and into arena, at writing desk, and in arena, took a canvas that was already stretched on frame and prepared to receive a painting, and exhibited the same to the circle, and the circle, all round, pronounced the canvas to be clean of any sign of any picture whatever. And the artist began his work, in his usual way, as heretofore described, then sent the tube of paint to Mr. Hosfelt, to examine how much the artist had exhausted the tube, then sent, in like manner, other tubes to the same party for him to see that no paints were as yet taken therefrom. Then the artist worked away, for a little time, at the picture, and had these last mentioned tubes examined, and Mr. Hosfeld noticed that quite an amount had been taken therefrom. Then the artist had the circle examine his work and see and mark how much was then complete, and the artist took the picture, worked a moment more at it and pronounced it finished, and had it passed round for the circle to examine, and it was found that this was the same picture as before stated, and that the heart-shaped work around the neck, that was just commenced when first examined, is now complete. And further, this painting came to the circle freshly painted, the whole works being green, as the painters say, that is, the oils of the painting not a particle dry yet, and it evidently will require several days for the oils and paints to get dry enough to be handled without defacing the picture. 744. Every picture produced at this series of séances has been accompanied by test conditions differing from those of any of the others, but each one was attended by tests at least equivalent in authenticating the work to those attending the production of this picture. Set in at 713 1/2, the production of the picture seemed to be the most that the spirits had designed for the book at this time. The remainder of the séance was mostly for materializations and their recognition, and for the benefit of Mr. Sprott, who, it seemed, was much pleased over his success in meeting and recognizing his relatives who are on the spirit side. 745. Red Feather gave us to understand that the work here is protected from marauding spirits and from being too much crowded by over-anxious spirits by a band of Indian spirits, 30 of whom attend each of these séances. Notwithstanding this, sometimes spirits unfavorable to this work project their influence into the way of the right prosecution of the work. The forms appearing were Hannah Stoneman, for Mr. House, one very brilliant in makeup for Mr. Sprott, said her name is Stacia, and was recognized by Mr. Sprott as his sister. E. K. Coffin, a spirit in visible form, said, 74.6. How are you this evening? I would suggest that you go right on, attend to your own business, let others do as they may. Just keep right on with your own affairs, never mind what they say or do, they cannot harm you if you do not trouble them. We have very difficult work over here to make ends meet. You mortals hardly realize what conditions are thrown in our way to block our work. You take a bad man and try to reform him, but often he will do worse. There are bad men, however, who will reform if you kindly help them, and thank you for it. But you just wear a great wide ribbon and go right on with your own business and let the rest of the world go on in their own way, if they don't wish to go your way. The foregoing remarks were provoked by some of the circle taking up some neighborhood gossip about our work, and worrying themselves about it. Seance number 46, November 30, 1902, 747. Regular circle present. No visitors. The greater part of the matter given at last seance, that was intended for the book, was an oil painting, therefore the record of that seance is not voluminous. Yogin 748. And now comes the artist and makes a crayon drawing. We know nothing of this personage except that he claimed to be a friend to Dr. Succus, but we presume that this picture represents some person who lived on the earth many generations ago and is now one of the spirit guardians of the doctor. We may not be doing violence to any people's theory should we suppose this to be the angel of the Lord that campeth round about the doctor, ready to receive and deliver him to his own place in the spirit world. Figure 23. Celia a typewriting sorrow, the result of selfishness. 749. This experience was dictated to and written by the spirit who generally manipulates the typewriting machine, and in the words following, my story is an everyday one, yet I think that it may be of interest to many of its readers. 750. I married early in life, and as we had little capital, we felt that we must slave to accumulate riches before we took time to enjoy ourselves. We denied ourselves any little outings or visits, even postponed deeds of charity until we should have more wealth. Thus we worked and saved for years, closing our hearts to all cries for help, stilling our conscience with the answer that, when we were able to aid, None should suffer who applied to us for assistance. Postponed happiness is a failure. We cheated ourselves, not only of present happiness, but of the power to enjoy in the future. 751. 1 year, just as the first days of winter began their cold blasts, a woman, a widow, applied to us for work for herself and 14-year-old son, but as usual, we felt that we were not able to hire help, although we needed it very much. Our bank account was sufficiently large to keep ourselves and several others in comfort the balance of our earth lives, but we had grown so used to saving that it had become a confirmed habit. The poor woman pleaded with us to take them in for the winter, offered to work for their board, but avarice answered, no. 752. We did not see or hear any more of them until one day my husband caught the boy stealing wood, that is, he was gathering up a few dead limbs. When spoken to, he said that his mother was very sick and that they were without fire. We had him arrested, and while he was waiting trial, his mother died. Although he was acquitted, on account of youth and the extenuating circumstances, he left the jail, not the frank, open-hearted boy who had entered it, but a soured, embittered man. 753. We felt that we had been unjustly dealt with, and thought no more of the boy until I entered spirit life, and to my surprise, I found that we were, indirectly, the cause of his mother's death and his downfall. Oh, how sincerely I have regretted my part in this tragedy of two lives. I have learned, when it is too late to be of the best use to me, that it will not do to put off right doing, but I hope my story shall be a lesson to many others. I tried in vain to influence my poor old husband to put our money to a better use than we had while I was in the flesh. The habit of waiting to do good had such a fast hold upon him that it was impossible to overcome it. 754. I will try and tell you now how I am trying to atone for my past neglect. The boy I told you of is an old man now, but I have been near him for many years, and his many crimes, I have felt, were the result of my selfishness in the past. I can see that if I had extended the helping hand when I should, he would, no doubt, have been a good man today. 755. I am often accompanied upon my travels by a woman who was very poor in earth life, but who scattered sunshine wherever she went. Her home was a log cabin with a mud floor, but no matter who the traveler was, he always received a hearty welcome at her door. Her treasures were laid up in heaven, while mine were hoarded upon earth. She can reap the reward of well-doing, while I reap remorse. I have suffered much, but I am not in the higher spheres, for I feel that duty bids me stay and assist those I should have assisted upon earth, and to try and influence others to be more unselfish than I was. 756. I have come tonight to try and impress you that the period of your earth life is so short that it does not pay for you to deny yourself, or others, any happiness. Do not deprive yourself of books and pictures until you have lost all pleasure in them. Enjoy yourself at all times. The world is full of happiness, if you will only look for it, and many who are unhappy will be happy, if you will encourage and assist them to the best of your ability. I can see now that the page of my earth life could have been bright and beautiful, instead of tear-stained and blotted as it is. How sad it is to see that, in striving for great things, you have made the mistake of overlooking the many small things that go to make up the great. 757. I know that the time is not far distant when my self-appointed duties shall end, but until that time, I shall endeavor to faithfully perform them, and in their performance, I shall find more happiness than I did upon earth. The mistakes of my earth life will be overcome in time, but not without great cost to myself and others. You can see how much sorrow has been the result of selfishness. If you could but love your neighbor as yourself, you would not knowingly wrong him, and let us hope that, at no distant day, you may be able to do this. 758. Read my short story and think of it deeply. Look around you and see how many are doing just as I did upon earth, putting off visits to their loved ones for lack of time, yet when the message comes that mother is dead, how quick they can prepare to go. Why not go while her sweet voice can bid you welcome? You know that life is fleeting and death is certain, so, think the matter over carefully, And if you feel you can, go to the funerals of your loved ones. Go now, and make their hearts glad. Lose no opportunity to do good and bring happiness to others, is the advice of your mistaken friend. Signed, Celia 759.